Hello and welcome. The month of May is Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month. It's a time to celebrate the culture, traditions, and history of Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders across the country. And I'm excited today to explore how some of those cultures found their roots here in Las Vegas and Clark County, and how Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders are making an impact in our valley today. So joining me for this conversation, Dorinda Burnett and Rosita Lee from the Las Vegas Hawaiian Civic Club, also Mark Padungpat. He's an author and professor of Asian American Studies at UNLV, and Wayne Tanaka, a longtime educator and community leader in Las Vegas. By the way, if you think his name sounds familiar, it's because he has a school named after him. In fact, Wayne Tanaka Elementary just celebrated its 15th year, so congrats to you, Wayne.
Thank you.
And thank you guys all for joining me. So we're gonna start first with Auntie Rosita and Auntie Dorinda. In Hawaii, we call each other Auntie and Uncle. Right. Thank you guys first for the beautiful lei that we're wearing because it's May 1st.
Yes, lei it's day. May 1st, May Day. Okay, it started in, the tradition started in 1929 in Hawaii when the steamships used to come in. We needed a day to celebrate spring. And so it became May Day. And it starts at sunrise and it ends at sunrise on May 2nd. So in Hawaii today, they will have, everyone will give each other lei. And when you give lei, it's a way of showing your aloha. And, you know, just celebrating the day, celebrating spring, and celebrating a time of unity or lokahi within the culture.
Well, the fragrance just reminds me of home.
Hey, mahalo.
That's right, you're from home. The leis that we have here are made from tea leaves, which is a royal plant that we honor. And yes, I was born in Hawaii, in Maui, but I am Filipino. So when I moved here, I was very much involved in the Filipino community as well as the other communities.
Awesome.
But it's Asian Pacific American Heritage Month.
Mm-hmm. And you know, Nevada, Las Vegas specifically, is known as the Ninth Island. Tell us a little bit how that even got started.
Well, because we had so many, I came here in 1979, and Wayne came way before that.
1972.
72, but I'm way older than he is, so. But coming here in 1979, I just missed the islands. But I wasn't the only one. There were so many other people that were already living here and working here, and they missed the islands as well. And we used to congregate at the California Hotel because that was a Boyd group hotel, and he used to bring a lot of Hawaiian people from Hawaii here. Well, eventually, as people were moving here, we formed organizations. One of the first ones was Kapoi Oka'aina, wasn't that? Kapoi Oka'aina Hawaiian Club was started by veterans, people from Hawaii who had served in the service and retired here. And they decided that they wanted to band together, and Kapoi Oka'aina, which is the very best, which means the very best, and that was started. And then in 1989, we started the Hawaiian Civic Club, of which I was a charter member, and helped Uncle Wayne Pinoki to start that. And then we started to have festivals, and then pretty soon we realized, oh my goodness, we had so many people from Hawaii. And then somebody said, this has got to be an island, and so it's going to be the Ninth Island. And I remember Lynette McCauley.
Yes.
Lynette McCauley started printing aloha shirts with the Ninth Island, and then we became known.
What makes Las Vegas such an easy transition for people from Hawaii? Why did they choose here?
Economics.
Most definitely. It was cheaper to live here than in Hawaii. It still is cheaper to live here than Hawaii. But the service-oriented portion of our community is very similar because, it, you know, of our service-oriented here with tourism, in Hawaii was the same. So it was like kind. And we always find that if we live here, family members come and visit.
Yes.
And they come often. Very often. Very often. The first year we were here, we moved here in 93. The first year we were here, we had 17 people from our family come and visit. And Auntie Rosita is right. Sam Boyd started, I know the woman who gave Sam Boyd the list of Hawaiians that lived here. Mm-hmm. And this was, you know, Auntie Audrey DeCaris.
Right.
And when she did that, you know, Sam Boyd mahaloed her by, you know, thanked her by giving her freebies for whatever, you know, basic things. Now we call them tokes, but it was, you know, even given at that time. In Hawaii, we call it makana, which is just basically a gift. Mm-hmm, okay. And so when Sam Boyd did that, it was really, you know, impressive.
And then they found, a lot of them found that they could find jobs here. And the hotel industry was hiring a lot of people. And we also had a lot of people who moved from Hawaii to California, and then from California, they moved here. And we had a lot of Filipinos. You know, we think of Hawaii basically as Hawaiian people, but we didn't have that many Hawaiian people, Native Hawaiians moving at that time. And we had a lot of Japanese, and we had a lot of Chinese, Vietnamese, Koreans, and Filipinos. And as you may know, the Filipinos are the largest in number here now in Las Vegas amongst the APIs. We have about 250,000. So that's a lot. When you think of the population that we have here, I think there's 2 million now total in Las Vegas. And so we're really, what we need to do is we also help them with getting settled. We help them about education, where to send the kids to school, etc., where to shop. We've been an information center for people moving in, and they always look to us. They look to the NAFA, the National Federation of Filipino American Organizations, to find out where can I work, what can I do, you know. And so we're glad that we're able to give that information and help the population grow in Las Vegas.
Yeah, Auntie Dorinda, you mentioned you get calls every day.
Yeah, well, you know, it comes in through our website, LasVegasHawaiianCivicClub.org. And we have everything from how do I ship my car here to what is the easiest part of town to live in, where's safe, you know, of course, where can I find work, where can I find childcare. And, you know, it's amazing to find out that, you know, Uncle Wayne can go over the educational portion of it. But, you know, when we moved here, I had one child because we lived on one side of the street, went to one school, the other one went to the other school. It was just zoned differently. And that zoning can be very complicated. So once you figure out how to work within the system, then you can accomplish a lot more.
And you know, with a growing population of people moving from Hawaii to Las Vegas, what are some of the topics or issues you guys are focused on now then?
Employment is number one, okay? Education is number two. Real estate is probably housing. You know, a lot of people from Hawaii, when they come here, they don't realize that, you know, Vegas is a tough town. We're known as being a transient state, per se, because of the gaming influence. But a lot of us get sucked up into that realm of mentality, and a lot of people from Hawaii have been, you know, destined to that for some time. What happens at that point is they don't realize you can be, you know, evicted from your home within 24 hours. I experienced once when we first moved here, a woman who went to the store to buy milk for her child. Mm. When she came home, she was locked out. She had no clothes, she had nothing. You know, so as a neighbor, you know, she came, can you help? And it didn't matter if she was Polynesian, Hawaiian, what ethnicity. Mm-hmm. You know, at that point you help just for the sake of helping, you know, and correct. Hopefully it works. Right. It works best in, you know, whatever economic situation they are in. Mm-hmm. So, you know.
Yeah, going off of that, I'm sure it's a big culture shock for a lot of people. Do they find that aloha spirit here still?
Some yes, some no. Some people say that, you know, you lose your aloha when you come here. I think it has to do with the gaming influence. But over time, you find out that, you know, those are not the deep roots that you once had. So you look for places where you can find that. Mm-hmm. It could either be in a civic organization, like the Hawaiian Civic Club, or a cultural one, like a halau or a hula school, or an entertainment company of sorts, or churches that, you know, will go ahead and extend an arm, and you feel the warmth, and you feel the aloha, and you just say, okay, this feels good right now.
Yeah, and that's why I brought up the churches, because I'm with Seek Jesus First Ministries, and as such, we do have a number of people calling or coming for assistance. And it doesn't matter what race, you know, we're there to help. But we have found that there are quite a number of Asian American Pacific Islanders that need the help. And so we provide the resources, telling them what agencies to go to, and we are the connectors. We connect people to different agencies to get their help. And we're glad that we can do that. And so when people come from the islands, they hear it from other people. Oh, you have to go to seek Jesus first. They'll help you. And so that's why we're there, mm-hmm. to help.
Very nice.
Mm-hmm. And food banks.
Oh, yes.
Seek Jesus first has a food bank.
We have the food bank.
On Tuesdays and Thursdays. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yes.
Switching gears a little bit, Professor Mark Padungpat, you are with UNLV. First, will you tell me a little bit about what got you inspired to delve into Asian American history?
Yeah. I'm a PhD in American Studies and Ethnicity, and so I first got into ethnic studies, Asian American history, as an undergrad at the University of Oregon. And that's where, you know, as a Thai American, I grew up in LA. I was born and raised in LA. And taking Asian American history classes, you know, I just felt like I was seeing me in the narrative, and I was seeing my community in the narrative. But what was interesting was that while I saw myself as an Asian American in history books and in ethnic studies classes, I didn't see anything about Thai Americans. And so at that point, as an undergrad, I somehow decided, I think under great mentorship from other professors, decided that I wanted to go to graduate school and write the first history of Thai Americans. It hadn't been written before. And so that's how I became really interested in just diving into the histories and experiences of Asian Americans, Pacific Islanders, and specifically Thai Americans. And I found that it just made me feel more human, mm-hmm. to explore these histories that a lot of what I experienced, a lot of what I think people in my community experienced, that others had experienced this as well. And there's something about walking in other shoes, even if you're reading about it in a book, mm-hmm. That you can see similarities and you feel part of a larger humanity. And so I think that's what made me both excited to do like research, but also there's something very fulfilling about learning about these histories.
For sure. And you know, that's a great segue into your book. Despite its title, it's not just a cookbook.
Yes.
Can you explain it a little bit? First, give us the title.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is, I wrote this book published in 2017. It's called Flavors of Empire, Food and the Making of Thai America. And it's a book that explores the history of Thai Americans going through food. And so it's not a cookbook. So a lot of people think, you know, I think the best way to put it is, if you're looking for a book on the history of Thai food, it's not quite it. If you're looking for a book on the Thai American community, it's not quite it. It's about the way that food became central, mm-hmm. to Thai American, the Thai American experience and Thai American community building in Los Angeles. But I think that it can be applied to thinking about other communities and other places as well, the importance of food. And how it connects to immigration, how it, mm-hmm. connects to community building, the role of restaurants, food festivals in identity and community.
For sure. And you know, maybe just dive into that a little bit here in Vegas. You know, food is a connector for everyone. When I moved here, I looked for all the Hawaiian restaurants I could over here. So maybe first talk about, you know, how the Thai community here maybe unites over that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's a similar story to what happens in LA. You know, Thai Americans, and I think all communities feel this, right? Like, you come to a new place, even if you're just coming from LA to Vegas, right? A new place, or you're coming from Thailand, there's something about the, just tasting and, mm-hmm. smelling and all these other senses, mm-hmm. Related to food that just reminds you of something familiar, of home.
Right.
And I think that's something that Thai people chased in LA, and I think that it's something we continually chase here, looking, mm-hmm. for food that is familiar to us. But I also think that it allows us to try new foods, and it allows us to build community in that way too.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys feel, and you can all weigh in, that it kind of starts conversations? You know, there are different, just like dialects of language, there are different variations of food versus the way your mom cooked versus the way you find it here.
Right. Mm-hmm. I think we all want to, like you said, you know, try different foods. In Hawaii, of course, because we are a cosmopolitan, we're a conglomerate of different cultures, we try everything, we love everything. I mean, I love everything. I love to eat. And Thai food was very interesting to me. And the fact that it's so spicy.
Yes.
Because our Filipino food is not spicy.
Yeah.
But boy, did it bite the tongue.
Yeah, yeah. Yes.
It's very good. And we have a lot of Thai restaurants now.
Yeah.
Here in Las Vegas.
Yeah, there's a number of Thai restaurants. And I don't think it's surprising. I mean, I think one of the things that, and I know we know this, but one of the things that a lot of people don't see is that because of the service industry, because of these growing immigration patterns, like, you get great food, Asian cuisine and Pacific Island cuisine here, that I think matches even some places in LA or San Francisco. It's just not seen, but the communities are here. We've established roots, and with those roots come the food that needs to sustain those roots.
So do you have a large population? Because I show, because we did this study, and I show that for the Thai community, we had 7,000.
Yeah.
So do you think it's grown more than that, or since we did this community of contrast?
I think it stayed pretty similar. Uh-huh. You know, Thai immigration patterns haven't really shown a great, even across the country, like, great growth and slumps. So I think it's probably stayed pretty consistent. Right. There's a lot of back and forth migration for Thais as well, so.
And we find, as far as the religion.
Yeah, yeah.
So what is it that brings people together is churches, right?
Yes, yes.
And we found that with the Japanese, Filipino, and the Hawaiian communities. Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting because when I first moved here back in 1979, yes, that's a long time ago, one of the things that I did was join the different organizations, and I think Uncle Wayne here can attest to it, that when you do join the different organizations to get to know the community, you learn a lot. Mm-hmm. And what we did, and I worked with the Advancing Justice, Asian Americans Advancing Justice, and we did a study of Las Vegas. We did studies of different states, but I work, of course, with the community here. And it was really interesting because I realized finally that, hey, hooray, people are interested in documenting, because it's, as you did with your book, it's so important to document.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so I've been with the Hawaiian community forever and ever, and so we don't have that kind of documentation that we need to have to show our people that live here how important it is that we learn to get together. And that's what I like about the study that, you know, that I did with the Asian American Justice Center. And we have employment, we have income, we have health, housing, and all of that history, which I'm very glad to leave this with you, so that you're, you know, not only Clark County, because Clark County commissioners already have this. I've given it to them, but yes,
they have,
I make
to read
sure.
It.
I make sure.
I also just wanted to say, yeah. You know, I wanted to say this right at the beginning, but I'm honored to be in the presence of people, Asian Americans who have made such an impact in Las Vegas, and I think. I want to say that and express that.
Thank you.
And, you know, studies like this and the work that you all have done in the community, I mean, it's the roots of Asian American studies.
Yes.
So as a program, you know, we go back to the, you know, Asian American studies itself goes back to the 1960s, and it stemmed out of community work. And so it was something that came out of the community, that the community pushed universities and colleges to teach about our populations and to document.
Yes.
To tell the histories, and then to take that knowledge and help the community, and to see,
I'll give you one of these.
Yes, yes, that was my long-winded way of saying, can I have a copy of this? Thank you so much. But this is the kind of work that we do within Asian American Studies programs too. So it's funny because a lot of people are like, oh, that's an easy class, right?
No,
or easy
classes. It's not necessarily. It's really good.
It's impactful.
Yes,
and there's
nothing,
you know, easy about studying, you know, immigration patterns or economics, war, how to create change. Like, those aren't easy questions.
Mm-hmm. It's not even easy with the Hawaiian or the native Hawaiian, because people say, oh, you guys, you're part of us already because we are a state. But then we have the Tongans, mm-hmm. we have the Samoans, you know, and Micronesians who aren't U.S. And so they're concerned about immigration, and immigration is so important in our discussions all the time. And how do we go about making our congressmen, our senators, and our representatives aware of our presence here? And we have been very fortunate to be able to work with them in getting this immigration issue out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we'll go to Wayne Tanaka now. You are quite the historian. I know you know all about this. Brief us a little bit first about how the Japanese American came to Las Vegas.
If you go to some of the grave sites at Virginia City and you see the Japanese and Chinese style writing, you go and get it read and you find out gravestones in Virginia City for Japanese date back to 1850s, you know? And of course, everybody knows about the Transcontinental Railroad and the involvement of Chinese in the crews building the railroad and linking up at near Salt Lake City at Promontory Point. But that whole movement doesn't negate the fact that Japanese workers worked on the Nevada Central Railroad in 1880 and connecting Battle Mountain to Austin, Nevada. And many said, well, what were they, the laundry? Well, yeah, and we joke about that too, you know, but somehow it's hard to trace some because they never asked them for their last names. You know, hey, Saab, what's your last name? You know, that never came up. Yes. They said, hey, Saab, go get the bucket. Come on over. Mm-hmm. You know, those kinds of conversations would take place. And so even in Hawaii, we learn fast in the islands that it is not, people in Hawaii don't ask, what race are you?
They don't,
You know, they say, what is he like? We always question, what's the family like? What's his
what's
character?
Your last name?
Well, you know, you're going to marry my daughter. What's he like? See, in other words, it's the sense of character. And my father and mother used to say, character is defined as the person doing absolutely right when nobody is watching.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
And it's not just Japanese, but everybody I know that has this cultural background from Thai to Koreans to Japanese to Chinese, they say, don't shame the family.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. You see that reaction, right? And yours too.
Yeah.
Don't bring shame to the family. You know, your name is important. And so identity means one thing, but let me stretch it further. In the Hispanic Latino community, they have a kind of a bond because of the language. But Asian Pacific Island population, we don't have commonality in language. But when we were brought to the plantation fields of sugarcane and pineapple and the fisheries and labor, everybody was speaking in something
pigeon.
We call pidgin English.
Yeah, pidgin English.
Yeah. And if a Portuguese supervisor wanted to tell a Chinese or Japanese laborer, we want you to go someplace, but wait here until the other guy comes, then you hear this word like, hey, Saab, goste go come, okay?
Yeah. Go stay.
Go stay and then come and then go to the job I'm telling you about.
Right.
And sometimes as laborers, they had big responsibilities, actually, because they lifted the irrigation gates to make sure that the sugarcane or the pineapple was planted or watered at the right time, every time. Oh, yeah, I have this picture from the Nevada Historical Society. John Mackey from the Mackey School of Mines, he's the namesake, and his wife, and the Governor Kincaid, John Kincaid. Now you're saying, okay, why does the governor of Nevada, John Mackey from the mines, and then dead center of that, President Ulysses S. Grant and his wife. And the only person kneeling in the picture is Mr. Yanada, who happens to be a recorded photograph of a Japanese person who was Ulysses S. Grant's mining guide.
Oh my goodness.
They entrusted him with the President of the United States. Well, there are other names like that on gravestones, and if you look up family names. But then we shift to the 30s and 60s. And in those 30 years, the war, yes, of course. But there were farmers here. The farmers most noted are Bill Nanyu Tomiyasu, who has an elementary school named for him. And his home, the adobe home that's dirt floor, is still standing.
That's on Pecos, I believe.
It's on Pecos, actually in the property of Casa de Shenandoah, Wayne Newton's ranch estate, right?
Yes.
And then what is that doing there and why didn't he knock it down? Well, Mr. Las Vegas, Wayne Newton, was very respectful of history too. He happened to be married to a Japanese woman from Hawaii, Elaine Sato.
Elaine.
Wayne Newton's only daughter is half Japanese. Yes, and we're very proud of that.
Of course.
And I'm sure he is too. But because Nanyu Tomiyasu was there, he still stressed education. So his three sons, one physician, one chemist, one PhD in pharmacy, I believe, the daughter who is also a doctor, physician, and of course his son who kept up the business in landscaping. We find that while the Tomiyasu Ranch was in the distance, along this dirt road we now call Boulder Highway, a family who had run out of money during the Great Depression was the father and mother of Larry Bolden, Captain Larry Bolden of Metropolitan Police, the only police command center that has a human name on it. He was the first black police officer for the Metropolitan PD. Now, how does this relate to Tomiyasu? His father ran out of gas out on Boulder Highway and looked out in the distance. And so he and his oldest son walked to the light and came across Wayne Newton's, Tomiyasu's home.
Right, yeah.
They ended up sharecropping because Larry Bolden's father was a pig farmer. And Tomiyasu had vegetables and fruit that sometimes not selling became food. So they sharecropped. And and so here we have, Larry Bolden's wife was a teacher. And she was partnered in teaching with Jeanette Matsuura.
Oh, Jeanette.
Yeah, Auntie Jeanette.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
They know Jeanette.
And they taught together in an elementary school on the west side. And were quite a team of teachers.
Wayne, you just have a history.
Yeah, well, I don't want to go on and on and on, but then we have Alice Imanishi, who was born here in 1928 and eventually became a member of our JCL. Then we have the Yamashita family that farmed in Overton and Moapa Valley. We have George Goto, landscaper, and started the JACL here. George Enomoto, who graduated from Las Vegas High School, became an architect.
I think Zamora was also part of that.
Of course,
Lorelei.
Yes. Lorelei Zamora was the first Filipino American teacher in Clark County history.
Well, Wayne, you're doing a lot yourself, and you've done a lot to bring the Japanese language into Clark County and schools.
Thank you.
Maybe can you explain a little bit about that?
Japanese corporations were worried that when their representatives were coming to America to operate their corporations, let's say Panasonic, Toyota, Mitsubishi. In fact, the people that provided the concrete for our new suspension bridge past the dam. The nine Japanese engineers that were brought because the engineers in Japan know how to build in volcanic rock, because that's the archipelago of Japan. And then they were doing it across water, and high winds, typhoons, they had to have things that sway, that didn't break. So that team of Japanese were there. But here's how the team of Japanese provided food for the dam workers for Hoover Dam in 1939. There was no refrigeration trucks coming from LA. So the Yamashita family, the Tomiyasus. They were the fruits and vegetable growers that were supplying the food to the dam, fresh fruits and vegetables to the dam, and very much appreciated. You had the Sam Nakanishi. Well, George and Sam were both soldiers of the 442nd 100th Battalion, you know, the most decorated units, combat regiments in the United States history, even today. But Sam Nakanishi started the Osaka restaurant. His son Gene runs not only that, but the commercial meals. They produce like 10,000 meals per day. Yeah, for Japanese tourists coming in, you know, on the buses, on transportation. And then we have, in early beginnings, we have the Minami family. Yes. Now, old man Minami, he had Main Street cleaners and a lot of very exclusive clientele, including some of the mobsters. Uh-huh. But their cash was good. Yes. Well, you know, they were wearing suits, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And but his grandson, Bruce, was a quarterback at Bonanza High School in the 70s and became, I believe, a captain in the Metropolitan Police Department. So yeah, so they have places for them, and then of course Gary Schofield.
Are you going to write a book?
Gary Schofield, you know, his father was the treasurer for the first JECL. Jim Schofield was an insurance agent for State Farm Insurance, but Gary Schofield became the deputy sheriff of Metropolitan PD, not 10 years ago.
Yeah,
yeah. And then of course Jim Tanaka, he was the bookkeeper and financial manager for Fletcher Jones Chevrolet. And his son played, his son Jimmy played halfback at Western High School. Uh-huh. And then we have owners of restaurants, beauty salons, like my daughter. My daughter owns a beauty. Hairdressers, school teachers, administrators, CPAs, bankers, attorneys. You know, you hear names like Garrett Ogata, Daniel Ishihara is with the school district. Bryce Kunimoto, Kyle Morishita, others. And then, of course, the restaurant owners like modern ones, Dean Okada and Mr. Nakamura from Nakasushi, Kaku Makino from Makino Restaurants. Then you had all the travel businesses, JTB, IACE, HIS, Travel and Tours, Scenic Airlines, Papillon. Mm-hmm. These are all Japanese people, you know, and they're all contributing to this vast income of Las Vegas. They hire people.
Economics, contributing to the economics.
Yeah, and modern people like Joe Noda. Joe Noda has national broadband services with electrical contracting, video, voice, and all those data things that people do, hotels, you know, they want connectivity and all that. And then, of course, you have the educational, civic, social societies, the JACL, the Japanese American Society of Nevada, the Japanese Language Teachers Association. Next year, you were talking about, we have a 24-year-old Japanese Saturday school. Right now, I think enrollment is about 196. They rent out Saturday out of Delta Academy, which I started as a charter school. And they go to school on Saturdays from 8 o'clock in the morning till 4. And they learn Japanese kendo, meditation, dance, mathematics, you know, all of the extra studies to make them make sure that they can, if they go back to Japan, they can do all the kanji, they can do all the math, and they can do all the stuff that gets them promoted in Japan, not just here.
Right.
Yeah, and then I think the Thai Am Society has a program on Channel 96, Cox, and Sue Tamangvosa is the hostess, and she interviewed Kengo Shizuma, who is with the technology operator. He is in the surgery rooms of technology that people use in heart transplants, lung, and... Well, Kengo was a student in the Japanese Saturday School and then graduated from Clark in the magnet school and then went on to Duke University and is back now giving back of himself to the school and to the community.
Well, Wayne, you are such a humble man, but I want to turn it back onto you. You have an elementary school named after you. Why are you so passionate about students in Clark County?
Well, Auntie Roa and I, we grew up in the same town.
Lahaina, Maui.
And so we have always said, there's a Japanese saying, Filipinos also say it, you know, we know you by who you walk with. Mm-hmm. Well, in the Japanese terminology, it says, kodomo no tameni, which means for the sake of the children. Uh-huh. In other words, you can live one day or 100 years. And if you do nothing to help children develop and grow, you've wasted your life.
Mm-hmm. They're the future.
Yeah. So my father was a minister. My mother was a school teacher. And from a very young age, we were brought up, kodomo no tameni, for the sake of the children, do it right, mm-hmm. for the sake of the children, you know?
Very
and that's
important.
Characteristic, yeah. in all of us.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes.
Don't shame the family.
Yeah. yeah. yeah, correct.
Remember your last name, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Bipono in Hawaiian.
It is.
You know, bipono, be right with everything that is you. What is you? What is your future? What is, you know, represent your past? Everything is just winded in together.
Correct. It's a foundation that you set right. up. And that's, people always ask me, why are you still so very much involved? Because I've been doing, you know, this kind of work for many, many years. And I say it's because of my children, my grandchildren, and my great-grandchildren. And by the way, I just had the 16th great-grandchild, who was born on Monday, this past Monday. And I'm expecting the 17th next month. So we're growing, you know. Right. But it's for them. It's for the children. And education is so important. And one of the things, Wayne, I've found that our Clark County School District sometimes doesn't look into the cultures of the AAPIs and Pacific Islanders and Native Hawaiians. And so it's up to us to keep talking to them. And also about the veterans. I know that I talk so much about the Filipino World War II veterans and the you know, working and fighting side by side with the Americans. But then we have a wonderful senator, Senator Harry Reid, who helped us with, you know, with the bills that came up, and he introduced them and made sure that they got to the floor. And so we were able to help the Filipino World War II veterans. But our school district is going to include that, by the way, in the curriculum, which is wonderful, and I'm so grateful for our commissioner Tick Segerbloom, mm-hmm. who has said yes, we've got to do that, and he's very cooperative about that. So education and our children, and I really don't like the fact that for many years Nevada was at the very bottom, mm-hmm. as far as, you know, our status in mm-hmm. education. Are we getting above that now, Wayne?
I think every day is a challenge.
Every day is a challenge. Yeah. I like that answer. Mm-hmm. Every day is a challenge.
But I think what's very important is this is a 24-hour town. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times, parents aren't available at traditional times. Like if you go down, say, to the next state in a little small town, both parents are home at a certain time. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, they have jobs, they have work, yes. but they're home. And in our town, sometimes with single parents and a shift designed income is very, very hard. So what we created are things like our safekey programs so that parents don't have to give up an hour's work, they don't have to rush to and cause car accidents, mm-hmm. but they have a time and place at schools where we can have their children supervised and in homework activities and to keep them closer to us. And I think the other thing I need to bring up is in 1974, we found out that history books didn't have anything on the
Asian
relocation.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't
also,
have
right,
very much
yeah.
about Asian studies mm-hmm. or anything. Mm-hmm. They didn't have anything about the Buffalo Soldiers.
But it's going to be included this time. That's what I heard.
In 1976, all textbooks yeah. in Nevada yeah. could not be purchased unless they had the story of the Buffalo Soldier, the 442nd 100 Battalion, the redress process. And in fact, you should know this, June 11th, and that weekend, some of the survivors of Manzanar are having their reunion
here
at the California Hotel.
Oh,
right.
Wonderful.
Where
yeah.
else? What?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I think in the Maile Ohana room.
And in that same time period, the Filipinos are celebrating the Independence Day.
Oh, okay.
And yes.
Oh,
so
yeah.
it's just amazing, you know, how right. we all work together.
Yeah,
you know?
And you know, and I think what we're gonna see, right, mm-hmm. with this new curriculum and all of the stories that that Mr. Tanaka has offered us mm-hmm. is that these stories are not just their like those people's stories.
No.
It's not just about the Filipinos or the Japanese mm-hmm. or they are, but they're also about the broader human condition.
Yes.
Right. That like we can understand and our children can understand and our youth can understand what it means to build community.
Yes.
Right? What it means to build a life.
Yeah. Heritage.
Exactly.
To be proud of
it. To be proud of it. And then also you know, all of these other larger issues can be learned and can be thought about by going through all of our experiences. And that it's not just like, oh, that's nice, right? Like, that's a nice piece of history. But really, this is about all of our history.
Well, Clark County School District and the state have been very responsive to teacher training programs and letting teachers, after they go to so many training sessions, to gain credit for lifting their income. And so as they do this, we provide the speakers, the teachers, the trainers. We had one based on the 100 years of baseball, for example.
Yeah.
The Japanese have been playing in baseball. And if in the camps, sometimes they had teams that were given permission to go to other places to, and in the local communities. And players that eventually got recruited into the Salt Lake Bees, for example, were some of the Japanese-American players. Well, one of them happened to be Koi Nakagawa, and he produced a movie, and it was called 100 Years in Baseball. And it was about Topaz going out and beating the hometown team. But the history of it also is the Cubs, National League, were traveling the United States to promote baseball, and they stopped by and played again in San Fernando. This little Japanese-American team, where the tallest player was 5'7". And the Chicago,
the Cubs lost.
Cubs lost. 4-3
Well, on that note, we have to start wrapping things up. So we'll just start going down the line, and maybe just a final message. You know, with this being Asian American Pacific Islander Month, you know, what do you want viewers to take away from this?
Again, my name is Dorinda Punani Keola Burnett. Okay. I'm one of the historians for Hawaiian culture here in Las Vegas. I'm also a Hawaiian folklorist for Nevada Arts Council. So I bring, and I've done it, an artist in residence program that, you know, it's important to know your roots, because once you know your roots as a bird, you can be able to fly wherever you are and be secure with where you're at in your self-identity and self-sustaining wherever you are in the world.
Beautiful message. Auntie Rosita?
Well, what I'd like to leave is this, that we are actually all one people, no matter what your racial background is, because we are, you know, from the same. We are created accordingly. And so we share our community, we share our culture. And what I'd like very much for people to understand is that they need to be engaged. They need civic engagement, and not just hide in their homes. But when it's time to come out to vote, to get that education, they need to do that. And when it's time to participate in the census, please come out and be counted. It's so important that all of us be counted. And maybe they don't understand why, and so it's up to us to educate them. We need to let them know that it is because of the count that we have, that we have, that we choose, and we're able to have the number of representatives in Congress.
Yes.
Our representatives, our congressmen, and our senators. And because of the count, then we also know how the government will be able to help the state financially, to take care of schools, to take care of police, to take care of infrastructure, all of this. And it is up to us as Asian Americans, Pacific Islanders, Native Hawaiians, to step up and be counted and to have our voice heard, because we matter in this community. We matter, and we need to have our voice heard by all.
For sure. And Mark?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, in addition to what everyone else has said, that Asian American Studies is a thing. It exists. We actually offer courses and a major at UNLV, and, you know, we're really excited about the program. And that really at the, you know, for me, it's just important to understand that Asian Americans have had made an impact in this city since the 1970s and 80s. Actually, I mean, way before that, but with, you know, growing numbers. Right, since the 80s and the 90s, and that we are building communities here, that we've established roots here, and that it challenges this idea of Vegas as a transient place. And I think that's really important for all of us in Vegas to start to understand that that we do have community, we just have to look at the communities who are actually doing that work of building and establishing roots to see that we have a sense of identity and civic identity and pride of being from Las Vegas. Yes. Yeah.
Definitely, and I think that conversation has just proved it right here. You know, you guys, your lives intersect, you have common ground, mm-hmm. and it's stuff maybe you guys didn't know about before. Mm-hmm. And Wayne.
Thank you. First of all, hold up Kaimaina Magazine and Japan Times. They can always film this later, but these are some of the major publications that show the realtors, business people, restaurants. They do the advertising. Jill Munemitsu, yes. That's family. My brother's classmate at Lahaina Luna High School is Lee Munemitsu, their father and father-in-law. And yeah, and then just so you know how active we are participating in the community, we all know we're working to with the commissioners.
Yes.
To
right.
see if we can create the East-West
yes.
Center.
Yes.
We're working on developing that commission.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And we're really looking for people that aren't selfish, but
correct.
Selfless.
Yes.
I mean, this is not an issue on how to promote yourself into a political position. Mm-hmm. This is about helping your
yes.
cultural and your mm-hmm. center and your community mm-hmm. and the people from young to old.
Right. Yes.
In conclusion, we all stand ready to assist at all times in helping the Las Vegas community grow and develop as a pluralistic and multicultural society, where we are recognized for the content of our character, our trustworthiness, integrity, and hard work. We are, after all, raising families here to be better Americans in a greater America.
Amen.
Amen. Amen.
Well, thank you guys so much. You know, I could listen to each of you talk for an entire day. You guys have been so informative and inspiring, and I just want to thank you again, and I hope you guys have gained something from talking to each other as well. And that will be it for us. Thank you so much for watching.